Hello, long time no see, no hear. Whatever is the correct one. Anyway, hello again and welcome to Monsters Among Us, a Filipino-Asian true crime podcast. I'm Chachi, your storyteller. So, as you noticed, I took a break for 3 weeks. It's half intentional and half not. The half intentional is because the last episode was so heavy for me that I needed to debrief myself for a few days, and the other half, which is not intentional, is because I was so busy. And a lot of stuff happened between the 3 weeks I skipped. I won't be going into details, not much, but basically, since it was Mental Health Month last month, I took time to take care of my mental health by hanging out with friends and office mates. I also attended a concert and met my new psychiatrist slash therapist. Basically, my October is quite productive, so I hope yours too. I was also about to record last week and post on the first Friday of November, but I have a really bad cough and cold, so I just took my time researching for the following episodes after this. Anyway, enough about me. Let's jump right into this week's episode. This story is another case that is also somewhat close to me because the victims were my college schoolmates, although they attended college way before I was born. The case happened in 1993. My parents were not even dating yet at that time, but I think everyone from our campus, regardless of when they attended college, knows about this. And this case is another proof that the monsters among us are often disguised as someone who seems, quote unquote, respectable and even hold a position in the public office. This story is about Aileen Sarmenta and how she was raped and murdered together with her schoolmate, Alan Gomez, by the former Kalawan Laguna Mayor Antonio Sanchez. Before I proceed, I would like to warn that there will be graphic descriptions that are traumatizing to some audience, so listener discretion is advised. As usual, our sources are listed in our show notes. I reviewed court documents for this case, which is the main source. We also referred to news reports from Rappler, GMA News, ABS-CBN News, Philippine Star, One News PH, and Esquire Magazine. So if you want to read about it, you may check the links on our show notes as mentioned. Mary Aileen Sarmenta was a BS in Agriculture student from the University of the Philippines Los Baños campus. She was just a regular college student, active both academically and in organizations. She was also a member of the UP Sigma Delta Phi sorority. According to her friends and sorority sisters, she was a very beautiful person inside and out. She was sweet and kind-hearted, and everybody loved her. While Alan Gomez was her fraternity brother. Alan was a member of the UP Upsilon Sigma Phi fraternity. Just like Aileen, Alan was just also a regular student. According to those close to him, he was the funny guy of the group. Him and Aileen played board games and card games and hung out together with friends. The two met at the College of Agriculture. Aileen was majoring in food and nutrition for large animals, while Alan was in beef production. Some said they were in a romantic relationship, while others said they were just friends and schoolmates. Whichever is correct, it just means that the two of them cared for each other. Aileen was 21 years old, while Alan was 19. Both were senior agriculture students only a few months away from graduation when their bright future was stolen away from them. It all started when Aileen interviewed the then mayor of Palawan, Antonio Sanchez, for a school paper when the mayor took interest in her. Palawan is a municipality in the province of Laguna. It's just a few kilometers away from the campus of UPLB, which is located in Los Baños City. At that time, Sanchez was on trial for another crime, the double murder of father and son, Nelson and Rickson Peñalosa, on April 13, 1991. Nelson was a political leader and supported Sanchez's political opponent. Immediate red flag, right? But sadly, Aileen was totally unaware of the doom that was about to happen to her. And on the night of June 28, 1993, Sanchez's six henchmen kidnapped Sarmenta and Gomez just outside the UP Los Baños campus. According to the witness testimonies of the aides of Sanchez who took part in the abduction, but not in the rape and murder of the victims, they had been preparing for the crime since the morning of that day. George Medaldea, then deputy chief of the PNP Calawan, together with Aurelio Centeno, the prosecutor's witness, who was driving an ambulance, fetched the other prosecutor's witness, Vicencio Malabanan, at his residence in the early morning of June 28, 1993, on the pretext that they will apprehend Juan Rodolfo Calva alias Tisoy, a notorious gun runner and drug pusher in the locality. Next to be picked up was Ziolo Ama in Barangay Masiit, then Luis Corcolon in Barangay Mabakan. On board the ambulance, the five men made stopovers in barangays Imok and Wawa until they headed back for Calawan at past 7 o'clock in the evening. Upon orders of Luis, we're calling Luis Corcolon as Luis here since there's another Corcolon involved in the crime. At the Shell gas station in the poblacion of Calawan, the five men met and picked up the other Corcolon, Rogelio Boy Corcolon, Pepito Kawit, and Baldwin Brion. Then they proceeded to Los Baños. Along the way, Luis announced to the group that the real purpose behind the Los Baños trip is to take a pretty young lady, long desired by the mayor, and offer her to him as a gift. Luis, to satisfy his companion's curiosity, even guaranteed that her beauty will make their saliva drip. At a little past 7 p.m., the group reached UPLB. Witness Centeno was asked by Luis to drive slowly around the campus so they could find the girl. She wasn't in the university, so Luis ordered Centeno to go to a popular hangout spot, Agrix Complex. Luis, Boy, Ama, Brion, and Kawit got out to search for her while Centeno and Malabanan stayed inside the ambulance. Centeno overheard Medialdea inform the boss via radio that they were already in that area. The boss was the mayor, according to Centeno. The group eventually found Aileen, who was sitting with Alan in a parked Toyota Tamaraw. The two were about to go home. Armed with guns, the men forced the students into the back seat and commandeered the vehicle. Taking a cue from Luis, both vehicles proceeded to Barangay Curba to the Irais farm that was owned by the mayor. It was here where the horrors began. As soon as the group arrived at the farm, Aileen and Alan were brought down the van. Aileen was gagged by a handkerchief and her hands, like Alan, were tied. A white towel was around Alan's mouth. Mayor Sanchez, then wearing a jogging attire, emerged from the rest house and went to have a conversation with the group. This was their conversation, according to Centeno. "My children, what's the problem?" asked Sanchez. To this, Luis responded, "Mayor, this is our gift to you, the girl you've been longing for. She's really beautiful." And then Sanchez asked, "But who's that man?" "Aileen's companion, boss. We brought him along to avoid complications," Medialdea replied. Aileen and Alan were then brought inside the rest house where Aileen was taken to Sanchez's room. Alan was badly beaten up by Luis, Boy, Ama, and Medialdea and thereafter thrown out of the rest house. Kawit followed up by striking Alan's diaphragm with the butt of an armalite, causing Alan to fall against a cement box. Brion thought Alan was already dead, but Kawit said his death will come later. At around 1 a.m. of the next day, a crying Aileen was dragged out of the rest house by Luis and Medialdea, her hair disheveled, mouth covered by a handkerchief, hands still tied, and stripped off her shorts. The mayor, clad merely in white polo, appeared and thanked Luis and Medialdea for the gift. "I am through with her. She's all yours," Sanchez said. When asked what will happen to Alan, Medialdea assured the mayor that they will also kill him for full measure. Together with the badly beaten Alan, they were loaded again into the van. They were headed back to Calawan. On the way in Barangay Imok, Centeno, who was still driving the ambulance, saw the van sway from side to side as if a commotion was taking place. Then he heard a gunshot. It wasn't long before the van stopped and he saw Kawit drag the bloodied body of Alan to the ground. Kawit then shot the boy in the head to make sure he was dead. The convoy continued. They stopped again in a sugarcane field in Sitio Papotok, Kilometro 74 of Barangay Mabakan. Luis announced that they were finally getting their turn with Aileen. The men then took turns raping her. First Luis, then Medialdea, Boy, Ama, Brion, and finally, Kawit. Kawit invited Centeno to join them, but the latter refused. Just when they were about to kill her, Aileen cried and knelt to beg for her life. Luis gagged her and shot her in the face. Centeno was then ordered to get rid of the body, which he left inside the back of the van. Aboard the ambulance on the way back to their houses, Centeno and the other witness, Malabanan, said that the rapist reminisced about the murder and savored the night's escapade to their sickening delight. The group decided to cover up their grisly deeds hours later, ironically by returning to the scene of the crime. As a high-ranking police officer, Medialdea assigned Centeno, Malabanan, Luis, and Ama to conduct a bogus, quote-unquote, search operation in Barangay Imok, where they earlier dumped Gomez's body. Boy was tasked to inspect Barangay Mabakan, where they had left Aileen's body. Both bodies were discovered, quote-unquote, in the operations. Reports mention that when Medialdea saw Aileen's naked body, he rolled down her shirt to cover her chest area and placed a sackcloth, a cardboard, and other accounts to cover her private parts. The medico-legal report stated that Aileen's body had enough semen to fill a sardine can, indicating that she was raped by several men. Aileen's body was then brought to the UPLB police station. She was lying inside the Tamaro van. Her face bore a gunshot wound. A handkerchief was stuffed in her mouth. Her t-shirt was rolled up, revealing her breasts, and her panty was rolled down on one of her feet, still with rubber shoes on. The student milled around and were probably in shock when they saw Aileen's pitiful body. Aileen's doormate, which we will call Kay, hasn't learned of the horror that has happened to her doormate yet. She and their landlady were alarmed when Aileen did not come home the night before. She was never a delinquent resident of the dormitory, so they got worried when they heard that a body of a UPLB student was brought to UPF. They were asked to go to the UPF station and identify her body at 8 a.m. of June 29. According to Malabanan's testimony, that same day, he, Ama, and Medialdea carried on with their fake investigation in Barangay Imok. Unfortunately, the news was becoming a big deal. People from the press, the National Bureau of Investigation, and the PNP Criminal Information Service, the precursor of today's Criminal Investigation and Detection Group, had descended upon the small town after hearing about the horrific crime. The men had no choice but to report to Sanchez, who reprimanded them for not dealing with the situation. But he later on assured them that he could fix the problem in less the amount of a brand new car. What a sick bastard, right? According to Police Inspector Rizaldi Garcia, who was assigned to the case, he remembered how the local police did not seem to be interested in solving the crime. On June 30, Centeno disappeared because he had been getting paranoid that the authorities were making the connection that he was the driver connected with the case. According to Centeno's testimony, Sanchez gave him 2,000 pesos to lay low and get out of town for a while. The same day, PNP Chief of Calawan, Major Caño, received a pair of white shorts from Sanchez. The shorts were allegedly the ones Aileen was wearing when she was disappeared and were found. Sanchez said, near the National Highway in Barangay Balayhangin, by a card gambler who then turned it over to the mayor. According to reports, Sanchez sent the piece of evidence to throw the police off the trail. But the police suspicions were further aroused because the shorts were found far from where Aileen's body was actually found. Everything, however, crumbled for the suspects when CIS apprehended Centeno in Divisoria on August 10. Centeno agreed to be a witness. Malabanan followed. However, according to Medialdea's testimony, the two were just tortured into giving a false narrative at the other men. However, evidence and the pressure to close the case were against their side. A belt loop from Aileen's short and a cigarette butt said to have been used to burn Aileen were later dug up in the mayor's farm. Sanchez vehemently denied this, saying he was framed and the evidence was planted against him. He denied his involvement in the rape and killing of the students and said that he was at his mistress' house in another part of Laguna during the night of the crime. August 13, 1993 was the day Sanchez was arrested, but he maintained he was innocent. He then accused Teofilo Kit Alqueza, son of General Dictador Alqueza, with the crime. He was also a UPLB student and a fraternity brother of Alan and Aileen. He said he conducted his own private investigation, which reportedly led him to Kit Alqueza. According to Medialdea, Kit was seen with the bloody knuckles the day after the crime. The student, however, clarified that he had punched a wall. According to Luis, who had a more detailed story for the court, it was Kit who had been planning to kill Alan over another girl named Rose. The morning when the bodies were found, Luis even said that Kit even asked for his help in disposing Aileen's body. However, the M16 empty bullet shell recovered at the site where Alan's body was found matched the gun registered to Luis. On September 12, 1993, the court formally read the case against Sanchez, Medialdea, Luis and Rogelio Corcolon, Ama, Kawit, and Brion. 4 months later, in a hearing, Sanchez denied the allegations against him. He said, and I quote, "I can look them straight in the eye. Even if they could crush us into fine pieces, we know we have not done anything wrong. We have not raped anyone and we have not killed anyone." End quote. But then, on March 11, 1995, after 16 months of trial, Sanchez and his men were each sentenced to 7 terms of reclusion perpetua or a maximum of 40 years of imprisonment. They were also asked to pay millions in pesos to the families of the victims as additional indemnity. Judge Harriet Demetrio likened the rape slay of Aileen and Alan's murder to a plot seemingly hatched in hell. The mayor, who maintained a calm and religious persona in public, suddenly threw away this persona when the verdict was read. He was described to have been raging and shouting expletives, giving the audience and the media a completely different side to him. A year later, Sanchez and 3 others, including Luis Corcolon, were also convicted in the Peñalosa case. Remember the case which we mentioned at the start of this podcast, where the mayor was also involved? The Supreme Court also ruled him as guilty for the Peñalosa murders. The rulings for the 2 murder cases were affirmed by the Supreme Court in 1999. In total, Sanchez was to serve 9 reclusion perpetua. Now, my Filipino lawyer friends, correct me if I'm wrong, please. A reclusion perpetua doesn't mean life imprisonment, but instead a maximum of 40 years imprisonment where the convict is eligible for pardon or parole if compared with U.S., after 30 years. That's 1 reclusion perpetua. If in Sanchez's case, he has 9 reclusion perpetua, which gives him a maximum of 360 years imprisonment combined. But he's able for a pardon every 30 years. Am I right? Please correct me if I'm not right. This is why, in 2019, which was 24 years since his sentence, the Bureau of Corrections Director General Nicanor Feldon said Sanchez was likely to be released in 2 months when he was interviewed, which according to Justice Secretary Menardo Guevara, was due to a new law increasing good conduct time allowance and the Supreme Court decision applying this law retroactively. They said that the convicted ex-mayor had already served 49 years based on the computation of his good conduct time allowance under Republic Act 1059-2, which was enacted in May 2013. But the question is, was Sanchez even exhibiting good conduct? Let's travel a few years back. October 10, 2006, during a surprise inspection, authorities found shabu and marijuana inside Sanchez's jail. He was charged with possession of illegal drugs. In 2010, Sanchez was caught again with 1.5 million peso worth of shabu concealed in his tattoo of the Virgin Mary. An air conditioning unit and a flat screen TV were also seized from him during a raid in 2015. In April 2018, the Office of the Ombudsman also completed the confiscation of ill-gotten wealth from Sanchez and his wife, Editha. The month before, titles to 19 pieces of real estate property were registered back to the state. The recovery was according to the Sandigan Bayan's decision on July 18, 2016, ordering the seizure of the Sanchez's assets, including a house, two Mercedes Benzes, a Dodge Caravan, shares in a lending company, and cash in the bank. Such good conduct, right? So the talk about him possibly being released last 2019 enraged the public. More so when rumors started floating in social media that the former mayor had actually already been released. To counter the rumors, the new Bilibid prison allowed journalists to take photos of Sanchez clad in full orange. It was noticeable, however, that the mayor in the footage showed someone shielding him from the sun with an umbrella. The bastard was living his life even in prison, showing no remorse at all. There were social media rallies created, and aside from posts being shared on Facebook and Twitter, actual rallies have been staged, and a petition was also launched to stop Sanchez's release. Alan's mother, Lumen, attended a rally organized by UPLB students. The mother recalled that her son knew karate and would have fought back if he hadn't been bound. Aileen's mother was also interviewed by different media outlets, saying her pain from years ago came back. She expressed suspicions that money was involved in these talks of Antonio's early release. The rightfully angry mother said she agrees with the death penalty for cases like her daughter's. And up to this day, the families of Aileen and Alan said that they have not received a single centavo of indemnity from the mayor and his men. And for sure, the Sanchez family has no intention of paying the victims. They did not only refuse to pay indemnity to the victims, they even actively seek for the convicted former mayor's release. I know you're asking if the monster got released. Well, karma got their way, and just last year, March 27, 2021, the former mayor finally died. He died in a cell, 8:30 in the morning of that day. I know the death of Aileen and Alan's mastermind killer won't bring them back to life. Their precious lives, filled with hope and promise, were stolen from them. Gone were the sweet lady and funny guy their family and friends knew, but their loving memories remain. It is important that we talk about Aileen and Alan. It is important to remember them and bring awareness to cases such as this because Aileen and Alan weren't alone. There were many who were victims of other plots hatched in hell just to satisfy their devilish desires who haven't even seen justice. We hope that the victims of such crimes and their families receive the justice they deserve. This is our chance to call for better police work, especially in the countries such as Philippines, who hastily closes cases without proper investigation. We hope that equal attention should be given to these cases, whether or not an influential or big person is involved. Today, we remember Aileen and Alan, and after listening to this podcast, I hope you take time to think about them. And that ends the third episode. If you like this episode, please rate and make sure to subscribe and click the follow button. This podcast is available in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Please also follow our Instagram and Twitter accounts for updates on the next episodes. If there's a case you want me to cover, you can email me at monstersamongus2022@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. See you on the next episode for another true crime story. Bye!